Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
It's Monday morning. We're here outside of the Union Square Green Market. We're going to go in and gab with friends about what's good and gorgeous and delicious and in season. I'm joined by Amanda Dell, fellow food doer. You can find her on Twitter at AmandaDellNYC. Let's go see who's here. I'm here with Darlene Lacavara at Gramercy Tavern. She's a private dining room manager, and want to find out a little bit about what's catching your eye today.
Well, this time of year, it's just amazing to be in the farmer's market at this time of year. This is when, like, everything explodes. You've got beautiful fruit. The peaches are just kind of fading a little bit, but still great to buy. Apples are coming in, and it's really, what's interesting is that some of the pumpkins and all of, like, the squash and the butternut squash and some of the root vegetables are coming in, but you can still get corn and tomatoes. So this is, like, the best time to shop here.
There's a transition, and it's getting a little bit nippy, and people are excited for a whole new wave.
Yeah, and you end up just overbuying because you want, like, a little of everything. That's what I do.
What can you tell me a little bit more about Body and Soul? It's gluten-free.
It's gluten-free, but they also have all of their muffins are gluten-free. They also have really interesting, if you don't want to have just regular, you know, wheat, so they'll make like a spelt muffin or...
Cool. What's your muffin flavor of this morning?
Well, this morning I got a raspberry lemon spelt muffin.
And streusel, too.
Yeah. I mean, they all look good.
You say streusel and I'm there.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Amazing. Your kids are so lucky to have a mom who cooks like you.
Well, sometimes I complain that I force them to eat, like, what my son calls healthy fancy food, but...
Hello. Welcome to Word of Mouth with Leti Sue here at HeritageRadioNetwork.com. How are y'all doing?
Great. So, yo.
Wait, you guys aren't supposed to talk yet. Okay, so I've got other people here in the studio with me. But first off, some updates. You know, September off to a strong start. And I think that I'm seeing opportunities galore, and I wanted to shout out to some of the really great resources out there, because I know a lot of you are seeking that right next food thing. Want to say that Calintro is an amazing resource. In fact, I was just at the farmer's market yesterday with Amanda Dell, fellow food consultant, and she does some work with them, and they always offer up some amazing opportunities. You know, I love Good Food Jobs, love Nicholas Palazzi's weekly newsletter. If you're not already on it, the guy not only imports some of the most delicious eau de vie in the world and superb spirits, but he also has a newsletter that's chock full of good stuff. Most of it wine, but other restaurant and food opportunities as well. And you know, of course, LinkedIn. By the way, you know, Whole Foods Market Union Square is seeking a new marketing team leader. That's just their head of marketing for the store. And that company is, you know, shout out to folks there, ridiculous. You know, it's a great place to work when people stay for 7 or 15 years. This weekend, I'm going to be heading to Taste Talks by our friends at Northside Media. It's going to be in Williamsburg. Yay, Williamsburg. And the lineup is a lot of fun. Dan Barber, April Bloomfield, Mario Batali, and our very own Aaron Fairbanks, who will be speaking on the very controversial Is Chicken Back panel. And on Saturday is a whole lineup of talks and seminars. And Sunday is a big old blowout cookout. So hope to see you there. And now we're going to break for a very quick commercial. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Onions Milk by Iggy Dean on the Heritage Radio Network.org. Stay tuned for more from Leyte Sue. Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surreyfarms.com.
Every week, I bring on people we really like, who are doing everything really delicious. And I'm so pleased to have Eamon Rocky, General Manager, Bettany, and his partner, Bryce Schumann, Executive Chef. They are newly minted New York Times three-starred guys, and they're here in the studio with me. Welcome!
Are we here now?
Yeah, you guys are allowed to talk now.
Here.
Welcome. Thank you for taking the time out of your ridiculously jam-packed schedules.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Okay. Any excuse to come to Roberta's?
Oh, yeah. Okay, we're going to have some pizza afterwards, Avi. So I wanted to, you know what? Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Take us back to the review process. You know, I've read up on the latest news on y'all, and really want to know, you know, when the reviewers came in, what was it like here at your own home, so to speak, your very own restaurant. And the day of, how nerve-wracking it was, and the joy, and just how was it?
Well, I mean, for me, the review process is constant. You know, it's something that you need to be aware of, not just because you are anticipating a specific review, but because you're always going to be scrutinizing yourself and, you know, the work that you do, the work that your teammates are doing, and making sure you're on the same page from the day you open the doors and until, you know, you choose to move on to something else or whatever it may be. You know, you're always going to be providing something that's going to be evaluated by somebody else, and you know, making them happy is always the number one priority. So, you know, the Times just gave us a really awesome review, and we couldn't be more excited and honored by it. That just to be considered for the review process in and of itself, I think is really honorable, or humbling, I should say.
So what was it like when he came in
To the restaurant?
Yeah,
I mean, it's something that we talk about leading up to the review process, specifically to the New York Times, and you do what you do. You know, when you start changing things is when you make mistakes. And 9 times out of 10, you know, a restaurant or anybody who's being critiqued is nervous and unsure of themselves. And last minute, they start making changes and you drop the ball and then you have to compensate. And you end up not getting what you want because you didn't stick to what you believe in, you know. Mm-hmm. So for us, it's maintaining calm always. And, you know, whenever you have somebody who you want to impress coming in, you approach it with real confidence because you've done it a million times. We didn't change a whole lot at all, honestly, ever.
So, I mean, for people who aren't in the restaurant world, Bryce, what is that? What are those conversations like? What is that sort of, you know, when someone walks in, you know, some like kind of for people who've never worked in a restaurant before?
I don't know. It's, yeah, this is my first opportunity to be an executive chef. Huh. And for me, I feel every step of the way has been just so exciting and fulfilling because it's essentially the dream. So you know, you work until this point, and it's all, you're all waiting for this in this moment. And so when it starts to happen, it's very inspiring. And I try to transfer that feeling of inspiration onto the rest of the team in the moment, and let them know that I trust them, and that we've been working so hard and that now it's time for their focus and their determination, and I know they're going to do a great job. And then we come together and work together as a team, and we, you know, we do what we do, like Eamon says. And, you know, obviously you never know what it's going to be or what the final outcome is. And leading up to this review being published, I was constantly trying to reassure the team that, you know, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of restaurants that open every month in New York, and very few of them even get mentioned. And so for us to be thought of as, you know, newsworthy or reviewable, or even to be on the radar, is a really big deal. And no matter how it turns out, you know, whatever happens tomorrow, I'm proud of you, and we're going to do a great thing here, and what we have is really special, and don't ever forget that. And I think that, you know, obviously we're very blessed and, you know, really excited about the outcome, but...
How about the day of, like, what... When it came out first, did it come out first online?
Well, it's funny. The Times website, I don't know if anybody remembers.
It was down.
Yeah. And it went down, like, within the hour that reviews normally come out, you know? So, you know, and it stayed down for hours. So, you know, we're all hitting refresh and coming up blank. And
Syrian hackers.
Oh, man. It was so stressful. And, I believe, you know, I've noticed that usually on a website, you know, you can find more than one path to the same article, the same piece, whatever it may be. So, you know, after a while, you know, boredom and frustration and anxiety, you know, all together, you know, obsession, you know, you start searching the site and from every different direction. And so eventually I just went into the, you know, vanilla box post on the site. That's sort of like, you know, the address and the basic blurb about the style of food and the phone number. And sure enough, there was a link, just a little link on that page that said, you know, go to the Pete Wells review. And it was like, you know, finding the Holy Grail, you know, and clicking that on my phone and then racing through the stairs and, you know, trying to find Bryce and grabbing him, and everybody's, you know, freaking out and seeing the stars at the top, at the bottom of the page and the top of the page, and knowing it was real, and then settling into to actually digest it and read it and go over it. It was
and screaming.
Yeah,
screaming was probably for me.
Yeah,
and I was pretty hoarse. I trying to expedite service that evening was tough because I could not speak very well. We were just overjoyed. And then in that moment, it was like, wait a minute. Is it real? And let me pull out my phone. No, wait. Syrian hackers. No, wait. Okay. No, somebody else. Let's run downstairs. No, can we print it up? Can I get a printed copy, please? Somebody. And and then there was a lot of running up and down the stairs and yelling and screaming. I'm sure somebody waited for their food a little bit.
What time was it at?
It was... at 5:15.
It was in the service.
No, it was 5:30, 6 o'clock.
Yeah, it was in the service. You lose track of time whenever you're that excited about something, you know.
Yeah.
Time. It was. It's a series of moments, and for me, it's a series of snapshots. You know what I mean? In moments and feelings, and you're on such highs and lows. You know, when you're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, and then you get the news and. Thinking about all the hopefully things that are going to come from this review and all the challenges that are going to come, and you know it's like seeing your life flash before your eyes a little bit. You know, you see the past, the present, and the future at that moment whenever something that big happens in your life.
And so I mean, so much work has gone into it so much work goes into restaurants that the average bear does not see. You know, I remember, Eamon, when you were like, okay, like, I have to go to the test kitchen in New Jersey at, like, 8 in the morning. I'm like, why? What? I mean, that's
8?
Just something.
Sleeping in.
Yeah, something, or whatever, 7. I mean, 7 sounds ridiculous.
I was picking up cooks in, you know, by this Dunkin' Donuts, I think, on
Wow.
the 35th and like 6th Avenue to head over across the Lincoln Tunnel at like 5:30, easy. Because if you try to go through the Lincoln Tunnel and through that part of New Jersey after 6 a.m., traffic is just bonkers. And but yeah, we were like, we had no kitchen to cook in. The place was a total construction site. You know, there was no plates. We needed all glassware, silverware. We needed, you know, we were developing the menu, but we were still talking about menu structure. This is in at the end of February, and you know,
into March as well.
We were open to the public the second week of May, you know, and
super fast.
Yeah, so it was essentially okay. We know what plates we want. You know, going and talking to Jane and. You know, Jane threw by hand over 1,200 stoneware plates on a kick wheel in less than 2 months. It's unheard of.
Who is this Jane?
So Jane Harold is our potter that makes the plates for
amazing
for Bettany, and she creates this beautiful stoneware. And we designed a glaze and a number of different shapes, and working throughout that process. Discussing about how we wanted the food to look on the plates, how we wanted to serve the food, you know, what the style of service was, and how we wanted the plates to be very adaptable and to do, you know, from small plates to large, right. Larger entree portions of food, because we're an a la carte restaurant. And working with her to design these plates, and then essentially seeing her there at the kick wheel, going out and visiting her up on the Palisades with her husband Robert, who actually is a landscape painter and a sculptor, and he makes sundials. He's got like he must have 8 or 9 of these handcrafted sundials around in their garden, which is pretty amazing and unique. But going up there. Checking out the studio, seeing how she works, watching she fired ours in a gas kiln because of the time constraints, but she's also known for her wood firing, and she's done everything from digging the clay practically in her backyard to, you know, cleaning it and molding it, cutting it, weighing it, shaping it on the, to chopping the wood for the wood kiln. You know, then firing this wood kiln, it takes, I don't know, almost a day to get it hot enough.
She talks about waking up in the middle of the night to go feed it.
To feed it, exactly. And, you know, she's very hands-on. And I think it really comes through in the pottery. And Jane would say that her plates are alive.
Mm.
And I think that that's very true in the way that each one has personality. And each one's a little different. And... they're very unique, and you're constantly finding old familiar friends, and you're recognizing new people every now and then, and you certainly have favorites that you search for, and you find, and you're like, you know...
This one's good for the lobster.
This one's the bestie
with the lobster dish.
This one right now. And, you know, you see her fingerprints on the plates, too, where she's dipped the glaze, and... they're very unique, and we were really excited throughout that process, and essentially to have somebody hand make stoneware plates for a restaurant that are 100% unique usually takes months and months and months and months and months. And
we were able to push
and she was able to achieve this incredible feat, which she says when she talks to other potters and talks about it, she's like, they tell her that she's insane, because no potter would do that in their right mind. And she was amazing. She was basically, I don't know, it's a dream. And to see, to go up and see her is still a pleasure. And, you know, we're always getting, you know, oh, we need some more of this now. And, you know, I'm sure we're going to need a few more appetizer plates pretty soon and a couple new little side dishes.
Because sometimes they drop and they die.
No, that doesn't happen.
Oh, no, either. It doesn't? Okay. No. Maybe that would happen if I were in your kitchen. So some of the, you know, let's go, okay, blank slate, you know, Eamon, Bryce, you guys are working together now. You're drawing up the menu. And by the way, wondering what dishes, what influences from your mom or your wife or your travels, what kind of influence are you seeing in the dishes?
Well, I mean, most of the food obviously is influenced from my culinary background, mm-hmm. you know, working in San Francisco under Stuart Brioza and Nicole Krasinski, and then, of course, working for Chef at 11 Madison Park, and you'll see the influences right away. I got to cook what I know. You know, people kept asking me, Bryce, what are you going to do? What kind of food are you going to cook at your new restaurant? And, you know, and I always joked. I was like, oh, you know, like Sichuan Chinese or, I don't know, like Isan Thai, both of which cuisines that I love. But as a chef, I'm not really that familiar with it. So I don't think I would be very successful, although I think it's delicious. And it is my favorite food probably to eat in the world. But, you know, I have to cook what I know. And so you'll see that and some of that influence in the food right now. And obviously, as time goes on, as a chef, you find your own voice and you find your own sense of style. And, you know, I'm starting to see that in some of the plates and the way that I'm moving the food, trying to simplify, trying to focus on just flavors that I really love and heightening those. And focusing on those and trying to move away from, I don't know, over-garnishing a plate. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what that means, but really trying to sort of simplify the vision on the plate. And beyond that, yes, there are the other influences. And, you know, I've got this tuna melt on the menu, and it's not a slice of Wonder Bread with the tuna fish salad and Kraft cheese and a big slice of, 5x6 tomato or whatever. It's an hors d'oeuvre essentially, but served in four pieces for a table to share a little bite. And there's brioche, nice thin slice of tuna, this fontina from Osta, and a tomato heart, and then some sorrel, some wood sorrel on top, and a little. Yes, and it's a tasty rendition on a tuna melt, which was a snack that, you know, was special for me and my dad, and something that he would make for me as a kid, and I've always wanted to kind of translate it into something that was a little more fine dining.
Super fun, and your mom is like made you eat raw seal meat as a kid, right? Like, yeah. I just really adore your mom, goes. And I also adore, I just want to always talk about Taiwanese food every single show, like, find some way, but this is, like, perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, no, actually, yeah, my mother is a cultural anthropologist, and she also has a degree in nutrition, and she's always the academic. She always, she's done many different things besides, you know, she took me traveling the world when she was studying to write her dissertation and her doctorate, and then she, even before I was around, she lived in Taiwan for over a year, and she picked up a little Chinese, and I know we were talking about, you know, growing up in Eastern North Carolina and going into, your standard Chinese takeout place, and then mom would always try to pick up the Chinese with with the cooks, and I get this sort of, I must be the most embarrassed kid on the planet at this moment, because I'm just envisioning like how much these people are making fun of my mother in the moment, but, or it's totally confused. And I mean, I guess it's, you know, thinking back, it's really cool because I would love to learn how to speak Chinese, and I'm so far from it. But as a kid, you're a little bit embarrassed, but, she dragged me around, though, to, you know, we lived in the Arctic in Clyde River for like 13 months.
Oh, my goodness. Wait, so how does raw seal meat taste? I'm thinking, like, the animal is sort of, you know, it has this shiny skin, and it's a mammal, so maybe it tastes like...
Yeah, it's red meat.
Not chicken.
No. I mean, it's very sweet. It's red meat. I was a little kid. Everything that I'm telling you right now is just a figment of my imagination, practically, because you can't...
Obviously.
It's been so long ago. If what I remember, when... You usually eating it warm because they've just when you hunt seal, they dig a hole. They essentially, what if I remember correctly, you go out on your basically snowmobiles that drag these giant sleds essentially, and these the huge wooden sleds where you pack all your stuff on the sled, and you know, I'm in the back of the sled, bundled up in my like sealskin parka, with, like you know, all this stuff is sort of tied down with bungee cords, and then you've got a few guys with rifles, and you're going out across the ice, and you know, to hunt, seals got to breathe air, like you said, they're mammals, right? So they dig a hole in the ice so the seal can come up and get a breath of fresh air. You know, essentially the seal's just minding his own business, trying to get some air, and he comes flopping out on the ice, and yeah, one of those guys with the rifles takes care of business. And
sad face.
That's it, yeah. I mean...
Wait, so they slice it up right there, or yeah, you know, it's sort of still a bit warm?
Yeah, so essentially then most of it, it's dressed right there, and so essentially there's these little knives, if I remember correctly, and there's a couple different shapes, but they're called ulus, and it's like a kind of a half circle knife with a little handle on the end. It looks like maybe a little axe or like a little thing you would dig with your hand, and you know, they make these tools by hand with or you could buy them. I think at the time it was the Hudson Bay Company or something had a store. But nobody shopped there because it was too expensive. And you, yeah, they would, you know, obviously dress the seal, and then people would sit around and eat.
Dressed in what?
I mean, you know, like eviscerate. And so, and then take out pieces of the, you know, essentially they would save all parts of the seal. Nothing was wasted. Even like cups of the blood were saved, and some people would...
imbibe.
Yeah, imbibe.
But, it's good for the fertility.
Where are we taking this?
So this is great. No, I'm learning something new.
So if I remember, it was, you know, it's sweet. I remember being in Australia and eating kangaroo, and it's kind of this soft, like sweet, kind of dark red meat, and a little bit chewy because it's raw, and you know, I think as a little kid, you don't even think about it, you just do it because your mom is. And now, is it something that I would go back and hunger after? Probably not.
Well, you're my favorite kind of little kid, because I choked out, if you know, if and when I ever have kids, if they don't eat everything, I might slap them. So Eamon, your parents are both chefs.
Yeah, they were for a very long time.
Does that mean that, you know, you were like growing up and you're like, I don't want to do what my mom and dad do, or you're like allergic to that?
No, quite the contrary. I loved being in the kitchen, and I grew up in them. My mother was a professor at the University of Southern Mississippi, where I spent 11 years growing up, and she taught cooking. My dad was the executive chef of a country club in the neighborhood, and they actually met in kitchens. My mother's a pastry chef for most of her professional career, and they met in kitchens and fell in love, got married. I came along, and my sister as well. And I grew up in kitchens, you know. One of my favorite memories was crawling around on the floor of the university kitchen and trying to find the chocolate chips, you know.
Shut up.
Seriously. Yeah, those big bins of chocolate chips that, you know, reside in pastry kitchens around the world, you know, were just like the Naz to me, you know. So seeking those out was always important. And same thing, you know, if I'd go visit my dad at the country club, and huge cooks, you know, these big sweaty burly guys with cuts all over their hands and burns, and they were just amazing and captivating. They were like gods, you know what I mean? They're huge, and I'm just a little kid, you know. And
you're still not that huge. You're kind of a slim one.
That's true. Thank you for pointing that out.
And we want everyone to know what you look like.
Yes,
we're trying
exactly.
to audibly describe.
I thought my freakish appearance would be safe on the radio.
he's working out.
No, but it was fun growing up in kitchens, and I always thought my mother and father were such great cooks, and I took pride, you know, at a really young age in having a couple knives and sharpening them and keeping them nice and tight. And Whenever I was, I don't know, probably about 14 or so, and we were still living in Mississippi, my dad came into my room. I remember it very vividly, and dropped some information on my floor. I was sitting on my floor, and he was like, "Hey, you should check this out." And it was a bunch of culinary school brochures, and I remember reading them and thinking, "There's no possible way I could ever get in." You know what I mean? I thought I was never going to be good enough to get into a really good culinary school, and it was my dream to be in restaurants and to work in restaurants. And eventually, you know, I moved to California and applied to college, and I got in, and I ended up going to the CIA. So, yeah, food's been a huge part of my life. From a very, very young age, and my folks are now in ministry, no longer in food, no longer in kitchens. But you know, they still cook like crazy. My dad and mom have a beautiful garden, and it's always fun, and we almost always end up in some sort of, you know, market, like way out in the boonies, you know, trying to find, you know, where. You know, if my folks lived in New York, we would be in Flushing like every weekend. You know, seriously, you know, at some market that nobody speaks English well, and finding the most amazing seafood and the most amazing veggies, and guaranteed we'd be eating and drinking some amazing stuff. And food has always been a huge component of my life.
So both of you have foodish starts, and then very intense foodish careers so far, and. You know, I'm wondering, was there a sort of a turning point or a realization in your life where you were like, I have the potential to be really great. If I work hard enough, I might be talented at this. And I say this because the two of you, you know, from, I just know you as ultra dedicated, intense, like to the point of wild obsession, and you just have to be a certain way to do really well in fine dining, and in New York, you know, a world-class city. And there must have been some point, you know, and I bring this up because for me, like as in high school, I had this moment where I wrote a feature story about the brand new principal, and then the editor-in-chief said, "Oh, you know, I'm envious of this piece you just wrote." And I was like, wait, someone whom I admire is envious of me? Maybe there's a place for me in the world to tell people stories. And that was kind of like one realization. So did you have sort of that realization where you got really pumped? You know, because I know you wanted to be an actor at some point, and then that didn't really work out.
Yeah. I'm not pretty enough, I think. But, you know, for me, you know, along the way, I feel like you learn that this takes a lot of work, and you know, you can't shy away from that. And I mean, there's a lot of hard work everywhere, but you know, especially in restaurants, as we all know. And I think that, you know, I always have faith that if I work hard enough at something, that, you know, someday I can be successful at it. And you know, one person who really show that to me was Chef Hume at EMP, because he's just tireless. The man, you know, works so hard, and he pushed each and every one of us at that restaurant every single day, day upon day for years. You know, he was like this incredible extreme coach who, you know, your personal trainer who would just push you harder than you thought you could, you know, you could do it. Like, you're like done on that treadmill. You could not run another seconds, and he's there like screaming at you, and you run another 10 minutes. And he sort of showed me, and he showed, you know, the rest of the team, that if you want something really, really bad, and you work really, really, really hard, and you're a little lucky, you know, things can happen for you. And I'm not saying that any of that the chef did was luck at all. But that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that, you know, some of us, you know, need that. But I think that, you know, with hard work, dedication, time, focus, that
and love,
and love. If you really want something, that those things can happen for you. And I think, you know, it takes struggle, it takes time, but in the end, you can be successful if you want that.
I firmly believe that you make your own luck. And how about you, Eamon? You're ultra, you know, you get everything down to the technical, you know, perfection, totally obsessed. Like, at what point did you realize that you were going to go open amazing restaurants?
Well, you know, for me, when I think about what I want to do with my life, and when I think about what's going to make me successful, if I'm ever able to, you know, say I've done something that I consider to be, you know, honorable use of my life, you know, it's almost good to, from my perspective, to say that, you know, I was able to resonate with more people than I thought I would be able to. I was able to touch people's lives and be a part of something that was bigger than me. And I, you know, to answer the question directly, you know, if you want to relate with people and if you want to resonate with people, it's about language, and not just the spoken language, but also, you know, with food and you know, with the way that drink tastes, and the way that, you know, the smile feels when it's offered to somebody, the music that's playing in the room, and the way that people remember their interactions with you and with the team of people that you know, you may or may not be leading or a part of, or working hard to be a part of. So, you know, if I've been given opportunities in my life that have influenced my trajectory and will be a part of my future, it's because I've been lucky to be a part of teams that were so gracious and generous with knowledge and with language. And, you know, I Bryce and I met at 11 Medicine Park, you know, about 5.5 years ago, 6 years ago or so. And many of the same lessons that if I can speak for you, you know, that Bryce learned, I certainly learned in a very similar way in the dining room and in the bar, and, you know, from some incredible mentors, you know.
Tell me a little bit about this uniquely close GM chef partnership that doesn't always exist at every restaurant, but does exist so famously with Will and with Daniel Chef Hom.
Sure. You know, that's one major component. If it's not the central component to what you know, this business model is based around, it's, you know, a relationship that's founded on trust and understanding. And again, it's language. You know, we speak the same language. And if I didn't speak the same language as Bryce, and vice versa,
EMP-ish
for sure. You know, but that they, you know. Yes, for sure. You know, and I would never be able to relate to Bryce nearly as well as I do if I wasn't mentored by, you know, another great GM, by Will Gadara, who was, you know, respectful and clearly proud to associate himself with Daniel Hom, and vice versa. You know, you can tell whenever they interact that there's just such strong mutual respect, and it's something that I you know, feel I cannot think of any other way than to base my relationship off of theirs, because it is such a beautiful and strong bond of respect and of talent and of, you know, just brilliant leadership.
How old are you two?
Combined?
Yeah, obviously. No, how old are you?
I'm 28.
Okay. How old are you?
32.
Okay. Can we say on air how old are Will and...
I don't know.
Okay, so you guys are super duper young. So that's, I mean, lessons from...
That's,
you know,
super duper. Man, I got up this morning in my bed. I couldn't turn my neck left way. No, I think...
I'm growing grays.
Eamon and I, you know, we're striving to absolutely, you know, to do something together. And that was where the jump off point was for the restaurant was, you know... Let's do something together that's great, that's wholly awesome. And I think we both understood that to be really great at this, you need to do it in tandem, and you need to have somebody that you trust and somebody that you know have a ton of respect for. And you know, I know Eamon's a rock star, and I know every night he's gonna go out there and crush it on the floor. And you know, and he puts his trust in me to get the food out on time. You know, I mean, and,
what's going on back there? Yeah. What's going on back there?
And we may have experienced that sort of a relationship before in the past, but we're trying to build our own culture and our own relationship and our own sense of being. And we want, you know, at the restaurant, we want the cooks and the staff and the, you know, in the dining room and in the kitchen to both feel that and to grow with that culture. And then I think if we are respecting of each other, especially, I think the cooks and the dining room staff also can be more respectful of each other. And we want to create this environment where, you know, people are working together, because that's at the root of what we do.
You know, it's especially fun for me to have Eamon in, because I've seen you at Terra early on, and then at Aska close by, and then there was this ridiculous opportunity to work with Bryce, and you know, as a fairly young person, a youngish person, you've had boom, 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 a lot of really cool opportunities. Now, the last move was maybe a little bit surprising for some people, you know, just because people get surprised. And I mean, was that tough, like, to make that decision? I mean, obviously opportunities kind of pop up, especially when you are in the right position to see them pop up.
Sure. You know, I'm assuming that you're referring to Aska and Bethany.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Well, you know, opportunity did pop up. You know, I was working service one day, and one of the guys in the dining room comes over to me, and I'm talking to Frederick in the kitchen, and he's like, "Hey, I think there's a guy from EMP at the bar." And I was like, "Oh, cool. Let's go see who that is." And I went over to the bar, and sure enough, it's Chef Bryce Schumann. And I was like, "What's up, Bryce? What you doing? You know, having some dinner, you know?" And we just got to talking. You know, I'm a really firm believer in building and establishing and maintaining relationships. And, you know, I pursued an opportunity with Bryce to build Bethany with absolutely every assurance that Aska would be in great hands. And it is, you know, those guys are crushing it, and they're doing a great job and achieving great things. And, you know, I never would have you know, pursued Bethany if I didn't know that they would have every bit of support that they'd need to be successful. So, you know, it's not like I you know, jumped ship. It was a long time coming, and, you know, planned and executed well with good feelings, handshakes, and high fives.
What's something that you've learned about yourself in the process?
About just myself?
Just like in your career.
I love living in Brooklyn.
You love living in Brooklyn, okay. about running restaurants, managing people, something.
Sure. You know, it was something I was chatting with a gentleman last night. You know, we have at this stage, you know, the need to grow as a restaurant, you know, as our clientele grows, and, you know, there's increased awareness of what we're doing at Bethany, and, you know, more people coming in the door, and you know, our staff needs to grow, if not proportionately, at least it needs to grow appropriately to make sure that we have what we need to give those people the best possible experiences. And, you know, I was sitting down with this gentleman last night who's trailing and pursuing a position on our service team, and one of the things that I mentioned to him, you know, is that it's so important that everybody really, you know, digs in and dedicates themselves to this team and this vision. And professional and personal start to really collide, and your heart and soul. We talk about, you know, giving your heart, giving your all, and giving your soul to something. And you really have to if you're going to be in the business that Bryce and I are in. You know, you have to love it. So, you know, you talk about that, and then you think about you know, professional life. And it stops becoming just professional. It starts becoming personal. And I guess what I'm saying is a roundabout way of saying that people are the key. you know, investment in people as people, not just as professionals, but as people, recognizing that, you know, whenever our psalms are coming to work every day and our captains are coming to work every day and our runners and porters are coming to work every day, it's something that's important to them as people, not just professionals. These are not people that are just, you know, punching time cards and counting, you know, beans or whatever. You know, this is not just, you know, a menial task. This is something that people's hearts and souls are in. And for me, that is a revelation that's, you know, not just been with the opening of Bethany, but, you know, over the last few years, you know, I've come to realize that professional does not mean that there's not a heart and a soul and a conscience and investment and emotional gravity in each of these situations. So evaluating professional relationships with very personal intentions and very personal attributes is so important. Evaluating people based on who they are, what they want, and what makes them motivated, driven, and want to be a part of any great vision.
Thanks for that. So we're almost out of time, but I just had to ask this one last question because you seem like one of the few, Bryce, you seem like one of the few chefs who actually cooks at home with your wife who also works in the industry. So just really curious, and I had a chance to meet her. She's so lovely, and you two were so happy at your celebration with the three stars. Who's the sous chef? I mean, who's the alpha chef and who's like the beta chef at home? And do you relegate her to washing the dishes?
This is a dangerous question.
Yeah, I want to know this. Is it hard to cook with you?
You know, years ago when Jen and I met, and she came and visit, she met my folks, and she came over to the house, and I'm cooking spaghetti, and. You know, I was like, hey, hon, you know, she's like, can I help? I'm like, oh, yeah, sure, here. Here's a pile of garlic. I need you to peel all of this. And, you know, we always joke about that because she's like, I'll never forget. I can't get the smell out of my hands. And, but no, Jen loves to help in the kitchen, and she's a great cook, and she, you know, makes lasagna, and she makes great salads, Caesar salads, and it's, I don't know, I love it when she cooks for me because, you know, it's just so genuine and sweet. It's very special to have somebody that loves you cook for you. It feels great, and, you know, I cook at home all the time because I just love to cook, and, you know, she doesn't cook in two, so.
As a bystander to this, her lasagna is awesome. Jen Schumann's lasagna is awesome.
Well, you two are definitely both very heartfelt, but also great at the very elegant answers when they are needed.
High five.
High five. So thanks for coming on. We're going to do a little bit of winding down.
Wind down.
Today's really quick thought of the day is that I am so excited that Talia I can't even say her last name, actually. Bachi. I've never met her. I've heard great things. She and Leslie Parasu are launching a wine and beverages and cocktails magazine called Punch. And I urge you to take a look at this because, indeed, a lot of the particularly wine writing out there is so brainy and academic, and I cheer on these gals. You know, when I learned of this new publication, I can't wait for this and for others, and so check them out, and they're on Twitter at punch_drink. This is Leyti Su, your host on Heritage Radio Network, word of mouth with me. Until next time, thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.